Well, good morning and welcome. Thanks for braving the elements out there, a snow apocalypse of the 4 inches of snow. We both grew up in Chicago, so in Illinois, they don't close schools unless there's at least 12 feet of snow.
That's true.
So it's great to have you with us today. And for those watching online, we appreciate you being here as well. Our chef, who's going to be with us today to help us cook our meal, actually was not able to get out because of the snow. So we are again having amateur cooking hour, and so we'll see how this goes.
Twice as many amateurs this week.
True, and this is something I've never made before, only heard about, and this is the first time I've ever made it. So this is going to be exciting. If you are interested in making this, we're going to be making some Polish angel wings. This is actually a delicacy that is made kind of for dessert, for fun, in Poland for Christmas. And we're going to see if we can make that. If you're interested in getting the recipe for this, you can get on your program or online, and you can look for the recipe in that QR code or go to horizoncc.com/recipe5 for today. So let's start off. We're going to look at these Polish angel wings. I'll start by firing up the stove, get that going. And we are going to make these little Polish angel wings. What you want to do is, after you get started...
Hey, let's fire up that stove.
Okay, let's fire up the stove. Leave that down, yep, all the way down, click. And we got it.
Yep, it's going. All right, there we go.
It's going. All right, we're going to do about medium heat, as I did a couple weeks ago. When you see smoke coming this high, you can do smoke signals. Too hot. All right, so we're going to start off...
Chad is the head chef. I am merely the sous chef, so whatever he says, I do. So when this goes...
Poorly.
Perfectly. We will get all the credit for it.
The blind leading the blind here. All right, we're going to start off in your mixing bowl. We're going to put in 2 cups of flour. We got one in there already. You're going to add the second cup in there. And now we're going to add something that I am terrible at, and you said you're barely experienced at.
I have done it.
For 4 eggs, but you want to add only the yolk of eggs. And there's kind of 4 different ways to do that. There's a way to do it with a shot glass. There's a way to do it with your fingers. You're going to do the finger method. Yes,
do the finger method.
All right. I'm glad you're doing it, not me. So there's one. We're going to add 4 yolks into the mix. And this is something that is done in, yep, see, it wasn't just amateur hour a couple weeks ago. See.
Hey, we're going to get 3.5 yolks, which is kind of my personal touch on this recipe.
Like, I need more flour. You're going to have to take flour out like we did. All right, so you're going to put 4 or 3.5. If you like it that way. It's kind of a specialty thing that Drew does.
That's what we do at the Thorwald House.
So once you put those in there, what's unique about this recipe is that it actually has a lot of sour cream in there. So mixed into the mixture, we're now going to add 5 ounces. This is five tablespoons. This is 2 tablespoons. We're going to add that to the mixture. And then we're going to add sugar and salt to taste. And we're going to kind of mix that in. Now, the recipe you'll see online doesn't have this next part. I did a little research over the months that I've been making this, this morning when I watched a YouTube video. And what they did is they added a little zest, which I thought was kind of fun. So we'll see how it tastes. We're going to add a little zest, both from an orange or you can do it with lemon. I'm actually going to try a little both, citrus-wise. So we're going to add a little bit of lemon in here. And we're going to add that into the mixture. Meanwhile, if you want to grab a spoon, and we'll start mixing that up in just a second. Okay, so there's the orange. We'll add a little lemon zest in here as well. Yep. All right, let's pull that down. Nice, we're gonna add that in. We got the lemon and the orange. A little zest flavor in there with it. There we go. Nice. And we're gonna mix that up, and ultimately then one of the other things you'll see on the recipe is you can add like 1 tablespoon of vinegar, 1 tablespoon of vodka or rum. We actually don't have that with us today. Typically, Kenny keeps that underneath you keep that under there. So sadly, it was all gone with these 10 Christmas Eve services. We had a little bit less than normal. So you add that in, and that's going to create the texture from being as dusty as ours have into having it actually roll into a ball. So let's go ahead and move that down, and I'm going to tell you what I did this morning in getting us ready for it. We did forget, by the way, a little pinch just of the salt and a little pinch of sugar would have been added in there on the recipe. So just keep that in mind. Then what you're going to do is as you roll that ball in, there's some specific instructions to kind of get some air in there. And so you can see that you're going to roll that into a ball. And then you're really going to kind of push it down. You're kind of pushing the air in there as you're softening it. And then you're going to roll that out, which I did earlier today.
Nicely done.
That? Thank you. Yes. Thank you. It was an early morning cooking experience. Then once you roll it out, what's kind of fun is you're going to cut it into 1-inch strips, And then you're going to cut somewhere between 3 to 4 inches. So here's one there, there's one there. This turned into about a half inch. Try and target a whole inch. You're going to get those in place. And then what's kind of fun is that you're going to cut a slit down the middle. Now, don't go too close to the top or bottom. I learned the hard way. Some look better than others. And then you're going to actually do this really fun fold. You take this, you fold it inside out like that. See that? And that's where you're getting the angel wing. Or I'll do another one here, a little angel wing. And, you know, some of them look like fallen angels. Some of them look like, we need somebody to ring a bell here. Can I get a bell, please, so these angels can get some wings? So we're going to try and get that. Once you have those in place, then you're kind of ready to go. How are we doing on grease? Take a little guess here. We'll throw a little piece in there and see what we think. Yeah, that's about right. Starting to bubble.
All right.
So I'm going to take, some of these look better than others. This is kind of the nicest one here of the ones that I tried to create this morning. So you can see on the screen behind me there, I'll go up a little higher. These are the two little wings. Imagine a little angel here. We'll put that one in, and we'll cook that. We're going to brown it on both sides. And then we're going to do the same thing. It's another one of mine that looked kind of decent.
That's not bad.
You can see it's either a bow tie or an angel here. And then we'll do some of my fallen angels here, just you know, equal opportunity here on both sides.
Okay, good.
All right.
And then are these ones, you just didn't do that one?
Believe it or not, I did. Believe it or not, I did.
Okay, all right.
Let's try again. I'll fold it in again. What's cooking here? Yeah. Yeah, no, this is, yeah, this is.
That's going to be the best one.
This is why it's important to do 1 inch and not half.
When they come out of the oil, it's
just going to be amazing. Yeah. And then once they're kind of frying up, you're going to brown on one side. I'm going to flip in just a second. In fact, why don't you go ahead and give it a flip. And then you're going to put it on a plate. And on the plate, what we're going to do is we're actually going to add a little bit of sugar. And so specifically powdered sugar. And that's going to give kind of the angel feel to it. So this is, again, my family's been making these for, I don't know, decades. Even though I've never heard about it till this morning. But we've always thought about doing it. And I would try and pronounce the actual name. It's Chuksiki is the Polish name for it. Please don't try and reproduce that. But Polish angel wings is kind of what it goes for. And then it's kind of a fun little dessert you can have for Christmas and they have around the holidays. And a reminder of the story of angels. And angels are often part of the Christmas account. How are we doing on the browning here? Are we getting close?
I think we got some browning.
All right. They're almost like the Polish elephant ears.
Okay.
Think about a little elephant ear. My wife used to do that. We'd come home and the kids, about once a year, my wife would say, guess what? And the kids like, what? You know what we're having for dinner? What? Elephant ears.
And for so dinner.
We did it one time, about 3 or 4 times, the kids, and they loved it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm kind of hoping this can be a Christmas occasion here.
Well, let's see. I think...
Which one looks close?
That one looks like it's pretty close.
That is pretty close. Let's go ahead and set one there, and I'll do the powdered sugar to taste, as they say. So we'll see how we do with the powdered sugar. Yeah, that's to taste.
That's
to taste is what that is.
Yeah, but look at the wings on this guy.
Now that is, man, that's, I'm actually pretty proud of myself.
Do the sugar before it flies away.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of myself, meaning proud of you for doing this here. All right. All right.
Nice chef. Thank you, chef.
Look at this is looking great. Yeah, the sous chef is really, the secret is really a good partner.
Now look at this. You don't even
really
know.
The secret of the whole thing.
Which one was the dud? We don't even know. They all look so good.
These turned into like Annie Ann's pretzels or something here.
It is cool how they puffed up in the oil. I didn't really think about that.
Well, all the times I've done it, it really ends up, the oil covers a multitude of sins here. All right, so we're going to give it a shot and see how this is. Again, added the lemon and orange zest that I added, a little warm. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting. No, good.
That's Chad-ish for unusual. No, it actually is good. It is. Mm-hmm. You're right. It is. If you think kind of like an elephant ear mixed with a pancake.
I've never thought about putting sour cream into a pretzel or whatever. So anyway, that's what we're talking about today. We're looking at Christmas. We're addressing the idea, is Christmas just a story that's cooked up, especially because we have angels in the story? Does that mean it's true or not true? And we're going to find out there's angels all over the Christmas story. Mary sees an angel, Joseph sees an angel, shepherds see an angel, and even today we might find out that the wise men see an angel. So as you hear this next song, think about the wise men in the Christmas story, and we're going to find out whether or not what happened back in history really was true or just a myth. Thanks for being with us today. So in the series Cooking Up Christmas, we're trying to ask the question, is this story of the wise men, the stars, and the angels, is it real history or something that was cooked up? You might say, Chad, you can't have it both ways. You can't tell me that you think this is history and really happened, and at the same time tell me, and it's filled with angels. Those two things do not coexist. It's like saying you want me to believe that George Washington had a unicorn and rode a Pegasus. I mean, just the whole idea of angels takes away from its believability. Well, maybe, but let's take a couple thoughts in mind. First of all, 68% of Americans, according to a survey a couple years ago, believe in angels. So that's pretty interesting. Secondly, angels are pretty rare even in the Bible. The Bible covers about 4,500 years of human history, and angels only show up 25 times in the Old Testament. And so it's not like you have to believe angels around in every corner and helping you find every parking spot that you have if you're going to take this seriously. What's unusual is that there's been 500-ish years of no angels being mentioned at all prior to the Christmas account, when suddenly we have four separate angel sightings, all centered around Jesus' conception, his birth, and then when he's a couple years old. So it's suddenly this new, one time, not a lot of time, happens every once in a while moment where God, a supernatural being, does something supernatural to draw attention. But even if you're not sold on the angel thing, I want to show you there's evidence in this story that is so significant, it is so robust, that even if you're not sure what to do with the angels, you say, I got to take those claims seriously because there's so much corroborating evidence for it. So why would God send angels? Why would he send so many when he hasn't seen them in so long? To say this message is so unique. This time is so wonderful. I want you to taste and see that I am good, the Bible records. I want you to know that I'm bringing, like a good dessert after a good meal, I'm bringing something delicious into your life. And how about you? Do you like desserts? I love desserts. And I did say interesting, but actually it was really good. Everybody catches me because sometimes I say interesting when I don't mean that. I love desserts. And there are some desserts that are too good or they're just too rich not to share. Like, man, this is so good. You got to try this. You got to order one. Or maybe if you're a little more selfish like me, you don't want to share. You're like, order your own. Don't touch mine. But it's so good. You're like, you got to try some of this. And that's the idea of Christmas. What has come into history is so good, and it is so rich with meaning and flavor and purpose, it cannot not be shared. So I want to give you a recipe for generous sharing of this message the same way that the shepherds did and the wise men did. You know, I always knew it was Christmas when we went to Grandma Eileen's house, my Grandma Eileen Eltravogue. And we'd go to her house, and she would bring over Tupperware. My grandma loved Tupperware. And in this Tupperware, she'd open up, and there's this delicious peanut butter homemade cookie she would make with a Hershey Kiss on top. I love these things. Grandma always opened it up, and there's layers and layers of these things. And they were so good, and there were so many, we couldn't not share them. In fact, my grandmother loved Tupperware so much that when she passed away, we were going through her house, and we found probably 3 dozen Tupperwares, never even opened. She just kept going to these Tupperware parties. She had this deep freeze that was, I've never seen one like it since. It was like 12 foot long, 3 foot wide, and maybe 4 to 5 feet deep. I could climb into it. When my grandmother passed away, I climbed in the deep freeze, and it'd be like leftovers from 1982, 1980, 76, 73 when I was born, 1812, okay, not that one. But it was unbelievable. Like, as you dug into that freezer, you just got to see a history of everything that happened in her household. All the tastes, all the flavors she'd had in time. And I want you to know that, in one sense, we're going to do that today. We're going to dig down into history and look at different flavors, different tastes. I want to give you 3 tastes. The first taste is a taste of something that's just a delight. Taste the delight of what the angels have declared, because they are declaring something so unique, so profound, so different from any other philosophy or religion, They're inviting you and I, as they did the shepherds, to taste the delight. Now, it's not easy to see at first glance. So let me read you the story, and I'll show you where the delight shows up. Suddenly, there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly hosts, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace, goodwill toward men." So it was that when the angels had gone away from them into heaven, shepherds said to one another, "Let's go now to Bethlehem and see this thing that's come to pass, which the Lord has made known to us." So angels, whether you believe it or not, as the story goes, angels appear, and they say, pretty short, "Glory to God in the highest, on earth, peace." And look at that phrase, "goodwill toward men." You may have heard that repeated or read many times in your life. Like, they come all the way from their dimension to our dimension to say that, and then they're gone. What does that even mean, goodwill toward men? You kind of read that, like, I don't know, I guess it means if you want to have peace on earth, try to be nicer to people, is what it kind of looks like, doesn't it? Goodwill, be nice to people. Well, haven't like every religion, or at least a lot of religions all through history, tried to in some way say, try to be a little nicer to people? Does that sound like shocking news? No. Whatever that means, it can't just be nicer to people. It's got to be something so unique that they brought a whole choir to sing about it. What in the world does goodwill toward men mean? So we're going to get a little nerdy for a second, so stay with me in the nerdiness to kind of explain it. That word actually is a Greek word, and the word is eutychia, but it's actually a translation of a word from Hebrew, because the Older Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, are written in Hebrew. The new, the back end of the Bible is written in Greek. So they're using a Greek word, eutychia, to translate a Hebrew word, reson. It means to be pleased with, to accept favorably, to delight in. They're saying, the God of the universe, you can know for sure that he's delighted in you, that he can accept you favorably. Wow, that's a lot better than try harder to be a nice person. Eutychia, raison, goodwill, acceptance, the delight of your creator, not just on what you do, delighted in who you are. Wow. Isn't that what we all long for? Don't we all long for our fathers, our earthly fathers? Not just care about when we win the races and score the goals, but to say, I am delighted in you as my child. Wouldn't you love to hear that from your coach? Didn't you have people in your life that when somebody you cared about deeply? Or think about this, like, who's your hero? The someone who is like the person you look up to in your industry. They're like the best of the best of the best of the best in your industry. Now imagine they call you on the phone. You're like, they know my name? I didn't know they knew who I was. They ask you to lunch. And they say, hey, I've heard about you and I've seen your work and it's very impressive. Wow, when a VIP says you're impressive, when your hero says you're impressive, it means so much more. But then they say, but I really want to get to know you. I am really interested in you. I am delighted in who I'm seeing here. You're like, wow, that speaks to the heart in a much deeper way. Eutychia. In fact, 30 years after this announcement, when Jesus is starting his kind of public ministry, he actually reads from an Old Testament prediction using the same Hebrew word. So it's a Greek word translating a Hebrew word. Jesus comes to Nazareth, his hometown, where he'd been brought up. He found a place where it was written. He opens up the scroll, rolls it back from this older scroll. It says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, kind of my mission statement, because he's anointed me to preach the gospel, this good news to the poor, not just the financially poor, anyone who's poor enough to say, I have tried the try harder to be nice thing. I just make mistakes. I do some nice stuff. I also do some kind of mean stuff. Man, I just seem impoverished in my ability to do enough stuff that God would be delighted in me. But the good news is God can be delighted in you based on what he does for you, not what you do for him. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted. That's why I've come. To proclaim liberty to those who are caught up in captivity, to recover the sight of the blind, to set liberty to those who are oppressed, to proclaim the, and there's our word again, eudikia, Hebrew word translated from a Greek word, raison, acceptable. God wants you to know there's a new year, it's a new time. It's a time that you can be accepted by your Creator. And that same old book he's quoting, if you go back in Isaiah a few verses earlier, makes this kind of cryptic thing. It says, the rams of Naboth shall minister to you. They shall ascend with acceptance on my altar. Like, Chad, I have no idea what that means. Well, it looks complicated, but it's really not. This acceptance, it's not just for Jewish people. Those were the type of best sacrifices that not just Jewish people did, but non-Jewish people did, Gentiles. This acceptance, this delight from heaven is for all people of all nations. In fact, if you were Jewish, when you went to temple from the 3rd century B.C. to 7 A.D., every day you'd hear the priest come up, they'd stand before God, and they would say, God, here's our sacrifice. Here's the best we have. We ask, please, 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 would you have goodwill toward us? Would you have eudikia toward us? Would you have raison for us? We just wish we could ever do enough to have your delight. But you never could know if you had it, because you never knew if you did enough, and how much is enough. But what the angels are saying is, this is now the eudikia you've heard about your whole life. God can have delight towards you. He can be delighted in you. Even though he knows your secrets, he knows what you've done wrong, he knows everything you've ever tried to hide from yourself and others, and he still can be delighted in you through his forgiveness and message. Now this is starting to sound a little bit better than just try harder to be nicer to people, isn't it? And that is why the shepherds, when they hear this message, goodwill, eudikia, God's delight in us for all people, they're like, we got to go to the manger and find out about this. So when the angels had gone away from the heaven, and the shepherds said to one another, let us go now to Bethlehem. We got to see this thing. We got to check this out. It's come to pass. Which Mary and Joseph and the baby they find lying in a manger. And when they'd seen him, they made widely known what they'd heard concerning the child. This dessert is so good. This is so delicious. This delight is so different from every other religion. You kind of hope for the best. Wow. We've got to make this widely known. Our Creator can be delighted in us. Now, I don't know if you have Christmas traditions. We do at our house. And one of the things we did growing up, and we still do now occasionally, is making Christmas cookies. If you ever roll out to make Christmas cookies, everybody has a different shapes. You know, here's the Santa Claus one and the reindeer one, and you kind of carve out the shape you want. Then as you bake it, they come out, and everybody picks their own color or flavor of frosting and sprinkles on top. And one year, I was doing it with my nieces and nephews, and they were kind of doing the standard stuff, Santa Claus, red hat with their frosting, and it looked great. And it was amazing to see each kid delighted in their creation. Meanwhile, I'm over there, always thinking outside the box a little bit. What are you doing over there, Chad? Don't worry, I'm fine. And as I'm creating my Christmas cookie, oh my goodness, I am delighted in this creation. I decided to go with a 5-to-1 ratio of the height of the frosting to the height of the cookie. And by the time they look over and I'm done, my cookie is like this tall with frosting. And they look over like, whoa, Uncle Chad, what are you doing over there? And they never even thought to put that much frosting in, never even thought to make it that sweet, never even thought to make it that tall. And I'm like, man, this is the cookie I've always dreamed of making. I was delighted in it with my little sprinkles and with my little stars and all, whatever it was I put on top. I was delighted in it. And God says, what if, as unique as you are, your flavor, your sizes, colors, what if you knew that the one who made you, created you, could be delighted in you? Doesn't that sound pretty sweet? That's what Christmas is offering. But it's not just delight. It's also a taste of rising joy. And this is also predicted by the angels. And here's where we start seeing some facts that really need to be accounted for if you've never thought about it. So let me take you a little timeline here. Jesus is going to be born because of kind of the guy who invented our calendar, kind of missed it. He's born around 4 to 6 BC, if you kind of look at the history of it. Alexander the Great before Rome. The Babylonians controlled the world before Persia. And then King David of the Jewish Empire back here. so many of these predictions were made hundreds of years before Jesus comes on the scene. I'm going to talk today about Isaiah, the passage I read earlier that Jesus referenced. It's written somewhere here in the 700 BC range. In fact, when the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, we have an entire copy of what's called the Great Isaiah Scroll, every single word that dates to 125 BC. It's written back here, but we have a copy for sure 125 years before Jesus. And this Great Isaiah Scroll predicts where he's going to live, see a galley, how he's going to be born, born of a virgin, how he's going to die by being pierced, who he's going to die with next to criminals, the fact that he's going to be resurrected, his character, his future, and very specific breadcrumbs and details related to his life. That's why I say this story can't just be cooked up. There's no way 125 years in advance you could predict with this level of absolute specificity the details of one person's life. And it's not like a fortune cookie. I sense you will have something happen today. I did have something happen today. I sense there will be a person in your life. There are people in my life. These are literally, he will be pierced, born of a virgin. He will have specific people come to visit him. And it's exactly what happens. Hundreds of years in advance. Let me just give you one of them. So in Isaiah, this ancient scroll that we have copies of, it says, "Arise, shine, your light has come, for the glory of the Lord is risen upon you." Now notice already, arise and risen. This is pretty important. "For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, but the Lord will arise." There it is again, arise over you. And this message is so powerful, even though it's a Jewish Messiah to Jewish people, the non-Jews, the Gentiles, will come to your light. They'll come and discover this. Non-Jewish people will come to see this when God's final forgiver and fixer comes to earth. And kings, that means rulers, will come to the brightness of your rising. So when you come on the scene, when you're rising to come onto the scene, there's going to be rulers who are not Jewish that come to see you. And they will bring gold and incense, that's pretty specific, and they shall proclaim the praise of the Lord, and they shall ascend with eudaimonia, acceptance. They're going to discover the delight of God on my altar. Again, there's hundreds of these, but just take the ones from the wise men here. Ruler Gentiles bringing gold and incense, predicted hundreds of years before Jesus was born, along with hundreds of other predictions. And what does the biography of Jesus tell us in Matthew? After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men, the word is actually makio, which we get the word magi, rulers from the east came to Jerusalem. The star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced. Oh, that's a lot of joy. Tasted something delicious, with exceedingly great joy. It's a, wow, this is not like regular joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother. They fell down, worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they brought gifts. Silver? No. Gold, just like was predicted. Huh. And incense. Frankincense and myrrh are types of incense, just as was predicted. Now that star, if you ever heard the Christmas story, you're like, I don't think I can believe that a star up in space guided them to a house in Bethlehem. Stars don't triangulate over houses. And you're right. You're right. It would be hard to follow a star and end up at somebody's house. And this is why it's helpful sometimes to dig a little bit deeper. So if we look deeply at the word star can also mean an angel in the Bible. In fact, there's one book of the Bible that says, the seven stars are actually just an analogy for angels. And we do that in our culture too. We'll say, hey, look at that star up in heaven. And then we'll say, hey, that celebrity is a real star, right? Words can have different meanings. And the Bible tells us a star can also mean an angel. Now, an angel glowing light in the sky in our atmosphere, that could lead you to somebody's house, all right? And it's leading you to a, like a celebrity, a rising star, like that great scroll predicted. Now the phrase in the east is also interesting. The phrase in the east doesn't just say its location. Actually, in Greek, it means as it's rising. So literally, the phrase means we saw a rising star. Well, that's exactly what Isaiah said, that he would be like a rising star, that kings come with gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Huh. But even this is just breadcrumbs. What happens in that manger is the beginning of the rising star, but it's not the end of the final star. It's not even the conclusion of the rising star. Jesus, 33 years old, he dies. He's taught all these amazing things, saying he's fulfilling the predictions of Isaiah, and then he's killed and put in a grave. And everybody's like, well, I guess that didn't work. He was supposed to be the rising star. What about those angels and wise men and everything saying the rising star? Well, I guess we'll find another one, another religion. But in the darkness of the tomb, we find that all those breadcrumbs didn't point to his birth, but to his death. Because after he's died and killed by the Romans, what happens next? 3 days later, we see what it means to be the rising star. All these other breadcrumbs were foreshadowing the ultimate rising of what it meant for him to come and bring the delight of God, because he was dying to pay for everything we've done wrong so God could be delighted in us. And that is why it brings rising joy to the wise men, but rising joy to any of us, that death can be defeated, that we can know for sure that God is delighted in us, that we're forgiven. That's what it means to be a rising star. At Christmas, no matter how many times you hear it, you're like, well, I kind of forgot why that's important. Oh, I forgot how meaningful that can be. It became so routine, I didn't realize how much joy, exceeding joy, like the wise men had. Our keyboard last week has been playing with us, a friend of mine named Greg. And Greg called me a couple months ago, and he said, it's been real hard because his mother has some degree of dementia. So she doesn't recognize folks. It's hard to see her in so much pain. And he asked me if we could just some advice and some prayer. And I was praying for him and kind of a meaningful conversation that two of us had. And then about 3 weeks later, he said, the caregivers at the place she's at, they've told me don't give her bad news because she doesn't remember who died or who's divorced. And she has to relive that sadness all over again. So I've been trying to be real careful. But then somebody said, but you know, it works the other way too. He said, what do you mean? She doesn't remember the good news. Every time you visit her, retell her the good news and she'll be rejoiced again over it. So he said, I'll try it. He comes and visits mom, brings an album of his family members. She goes, did you know that so-and-so got married? Married? Wow! Who'd they get married to? Oh, let me tell you about her husband. Let me tell you about the ceremony. Wow! And this happened 20 years ago. But she got a chance to rejoy herself, re-experience. Well, that is amazing. Did you know that so-and-so just had kids? Had kids? That's incredible. What are their names? And this old message from a long time ago, suddenly she was able to experience fresh again. That's what Christmas is for us. If you've never heard it, in fact, if you don't hear the message of Christmas and your jaw drops a little bit and you're like, Chad can't mean that. Yes, God sees you as fully forgiven based on what Jesus did for you. That's why it's good news. That's why it's rising joy. But it's more than that. It's also the generosity of God in a way that no religion has even dared, not even dared to come close to. That's why the angels are announcing this. Taste the generosity of what God has done for you. We think of how the angels appear to Mary. What do they say? Mary, rejoice. There's a rejoice. Take a taste of this. You are a highly favored one. Because God is with you. Emmanuel, God is with you. Blessed are you among women. Well, man, I don't feel blessed. I might get stoned for getting pregnant without having a husband. And so she decides to go and visit her cousin. And as she's traveling that way, only had this message to herself, this biography of Luke records, she enters the house of Zacharias and Elizabeth. And as she goes in there, haven't talked at all, haven't given her any of the facts of what the angel told her, the baby inside of her cousin leaped in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with God's spirit too and said, blessed, same thing the angel said to her, are you among women? And look at that next phrase, that the mother of my Lord would come to me. Now, the angel told her that God is in her. And that sounds crazy, doesn't it? She goes to visit someone, a relative, and the first thing that comes out of her mouth is, my Lord, my God is in you. Now, in our society, you might think, well, there's lots of people who believe in different things. Not a Jewish person. Jewish people are monotheists. They think there's one God. You would never, ever, 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 ever say that God was in somebody's belly. Except that God revealed to her, confirming to Mary that she is favored, God is with her, and God himself is in her. Wow. And while she's still kind of taking this in, wow, this is true. God has generously favored me. God has generously chosen me. Then Elizabeth's husband turns to her and says, yeah, through the tender mercy of our God, with which the day spring from on high has visited us. Like, I've never used the word day spring in my life. What does day spring mean? Guess what it means? I put it on the screen. Rising star. God's mercy toward us. He who is way up there has come near. He who we could not reach by our own efforts has come near to us. A rising star. That's why Paul, an early leader in the church, is, if he's going to describe Christianity and the message, he goes, it's about the generosity of God. For the grace of God, that's the gift. You don't earn it, it's not a paycheck, it's a gift, it's a grace. God's been generous to us through his mercy, through the Lord Jesus Christ. And here's what it's about. He, God, was rich. He had access to everything, comfort, the whole universe, everywhere. He who was rich became poor, impoverished, a human being, so that through his poverty, we might be rich. Rich in his forgiveness, rich as his children, adopted into his family. And when you're adopted into your family of a dad who's rich, you become rich. But with riches that moth and rust can never touch. That's what's being offered at Christmas. The delight, the rising joy, and the generosity of God. Do you ever go into Cheesecake Factory? And when you first walk into Cheesecake Factory, there's that shelf often on high of your kid of all these amazing desserts made by an incredible bakery chef. You're like, oh, those are amazing. Those are so on high. They're out of reach when you're a kid, but they're just amazing. And then you go and you order your food and you forget how big the portions are and you get done, you're finished eating, you're like, oh, this engorges myself. And then the waiters come over, and I don't know why they're all taught this, but the waitresses come over to your table like this. So, are we thinking dessert?
I don't know. I couldn't eat another thing.
Well, and some of them, they're really, really clever, these places. They take those desserts that are on high, and they bring them out on a plate, don't they? A tray, and they bring them right to your table. Well,
are you sure you're full? And you're like, oh, that chocolate lava cake looks delicious. Cinnamon donuts with raspberry sauce. Wow, I've never thought of that. And that which was on high, that which you could never make on yourself, you could never decorate it so good, can never look that good. You're like, it's come down to my level. It's come to my table. I got to eat one. Honey, we'll split it. Right? You got to taste it. You got to share it. The generosity of some baker, the excellence of some baker, that which I could not achieve on my own has come near. That's what Christmas is offering.
My daughter exposed me to a show on Netflix years ago, and it was called Nailed It. If you've never seen this, it's a crazy show. And in this crazy show, with a wacky, wacky host and team, professional bakers bake these incredibly crafted pieces. And then amateurs get access to the same kitchen, same supplies, and they're trying to make what the chef professional made. And it's always hilarious. Because here's what the professional chef has made, and here is the best effort, and that's one of the good ones. And they're like, as they unveil the creation of the amateur, as they unveil it, they all say the same thing. Nailed it. No, you did not nail it. No, it's like, you're so far from nailing it, that is just the worst of the worst of the worst. Not even close, right? The Bible is not about how you can get one more chance, one more try to nail it. Well, if I gave a couple more, if I just had 3 more hours, no, I am never going to, on my own effort, make that beautiful dessert. And the Bible says, it's not about you getting more chances to make a better dessert. It's about God saying, you give me your kind of crappy dessert, well-intended, good try, I'll take your best efforts and your worst efforts, and I will exchange it with my best efforts. And now you get access. I'm going to see you like I see that dessert, the best of the best I've ever done. And that's why I'm delighted in you. And that's why you can be so joyful. And that's why you can't not share this message. See, some desserts are too good. And some desserts are too rich not to be shared. And that is why what the angels announced, what they predicted, what they proclaimed, fulfilled in actual historical documents we can see and examine, speak of a good news that's never been proclaimed before or since. That you could know your Creator's delight in you, that He would rise from the dead, and that He wants to generously make you an heir to His family. So what about for you and me? What if this Christmas we chose to taste and share that message? It's really what our church is all about. Why do we do 3 services? Why do we have 10 Christmas Eve services? It's not like we're all bored during the Christmas season, need more to do. We are so delighted in what we've tasted about God, we can't not share it. The reason you come in and there's bagels and people greeting you and helping with the car is because we are so delighted in what we've tasted, we can't not share it. So as you look to this year and next year, I hope you've been able to experience the taste and joy of what we have as a church. And if you've tasted of it this year and you're starting to catch the wonder of it, I hope you share it. If you've tasted the generosity of God and you're like, man, God's been so generous to me that I want to give financially to the church, then please do that. If you're just checking us out for the first time, just let us share with you. If someone shared their gifts by serving you as a church, I hope next year you'll say, man, I want to share by serving someone else. In fact, if you've enjoyed our series this year and the different ways we've shared things, Raiders of the Lost Ark and Animal Instincts, let me tell you what we're going to do next year. Next year, just the first couple months, if you've been coming to our Exploring Service and you're ready to kind of maybe try something more, we have our series at 8:30 and 9:45 going verse by verse through the book of James called How to Live and Love Well in Your Life. How to get control over your tongue maybe a little bit more, how to maybe learn how to pray, lots of stuff in there. Then we're doing a series about hope called Hope Revision in the book of Zechariah. That's going to take us all the way up to the summer. However, starting in January, we're doing a series here called Heroic. We're going to look at how to be a hero and heroic courage in the midst of incredible historic events from Chernobyl to the Chicago Fire to all kinds of amazing things like the Titanic and what kind of heroism showed up there. Then I've interviewed lots of doctors and surgeons. We're going to look at the brains of the operation. We're going to look at the wonder in your body, the evidence in your own body that there might be an intelligent, wonderful creator that wants to give you meaning and purpose. If you like guest speakers, we had some great ones last year. We got some amazing ones this year. Here's kind of our guest teachers as well as our regular team. Tammy Jo Schultz, if you've never heard of her before, she is the first female Navy pilot. And she was able, before the movie Sully, when he landed that liner into the river and saved all those people, she was the most famous person to do that. She saved an entire airline, Southwest Airlines, that was going down. She's going to tell our story in an amazing way in February. Sandra Richter, who kind of specializes in ecology and doing things in nature with a really wonder toward the nature around us. She's going to be with us this year. Beth's going to be back multiple times this year. Chuck has agreed from Crossroads to be with us 2 or 3 times a year as part of our regular guest team. And then, of course, our regular team. But it's been an amazing year. And I just want to thank you for the enthusiasm you've given to our services. I want to thank you for the way you financially given to our church, served at our church. This last year, we had a 13% growth, and it shows up in all of our events. It shows up in our 9:45 service. It's at 130% capacity. We got over 100 kids in our junior high program now. That's bigger than most churches. Our preschool and baby area is exploding. We don't have enough room for all the babies and kids that are coming right now. Record number of people who want to get baptized and say, man, this is this This place means a lot to me. This God means a lot to me. So thank you for the ways you have served and given this year. And man, I'm so excited for what's coming in store next year. We're going to continue to taste these incredible truths and then share them with anyone who wants to check it out, ask questions, or dig in. So I invite the band to come out and do this last song. And this last song, I think, speaks to the message of Christmas in a unique way. Because it says, it wasn't just a rule book that came down. It wasn't just try harder that came down. It wasn't just try to be a nicer person came down. No, no, no. Hope came down. Peace came down. Life came down. Forgiveness came down. The very delight of God came down. So that you and I could know that our Creator is madly in love with us and forgives us. Not based on what we do for Him, but based on what He did for us. Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you've enjoyed our cooking series. All those recipes are online if you want to check them out yourself so you can do better than Drew and I. Thanks so much for being here.